You're listening to the Remote Explorers Podcast, a show that allows you to connect, learn, and be inspired by the stories of people who have used the power of remote work to have unconventional experiences in their lives. The podcast is hosted by Mayur and Shahzada, who are experienced and equally curious remote workers.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Remote Explorers Podcast. In the episode today, we have Zubin Mehta with us. Zubin is a writer who began his career from Bangalore and moved to Himachal Pradesh in 2013. From there on, he has been involved in several activities ranging from farming to eco-architecture to meditation. He's currently part of Ashram Space in Bir, which is a small community of contemplative creative folks, and now due to the pandemic, the place is shifting towards becoming a small publishing house. In this podcast, Zubin shares his very interesting story of how remote work gave him an opportunity to find his passions and things he really cares for. This episode is very different from all other episodes because it talks not just about remote work, but also Zubin's transformation from a city guy to someone who now lives in a village and is deeply immersed in spirituality. He talks about his 3,600 kilometers walking parikarma across the river Narmada and the lessons he learned through it. He shares his passion for community, sustainability, and how his priorities have changed over the years. Hi, Zubin.
Hello, Shahzada.
How are you today?
I am doing very good. Thank you so much for having me over.
Thank you so much for joining us today on our podcast.
Thanks, Zubin, for coming over, accepting the invite. I'm sure we'll talk a lot about your story and your story. I'm sure the listeners and we will get inspired listening to it.
Yes, very, very happy to be here. Thank you so much, Mayur. Glad to connect.
Yeah. So to our listeners, Zubin and I share a very special connection. I got my inspiration to be a digital nomad from a space called Ghumakkad in Himachal. And Zubin was one of the founding fathers of the place. And then we were neighbors at a point in time. So I feel that our journeys, you know, they are somewhat overlapping with Zubin starting first and then I'm following on those lines, those paths. So let's see what's in store for me. So Zubin, you were an early adopter of remote work. So how was it different back then compared to now? And was it difficult? Was it tough to convince your manager, or was it tough to convince your family about switching your base to Himachal from a thriving city of Bangalore?
Yeah. So if I look back right now, I feel that as in for me, it was never really a conscious choice ki mujhe kahin aur se jaake kaam karna hai ya that I want to do remote work. For me, what was the driving force, so to say, was that I just couldn't live with the city anymore. Not that anything is wrong with the city, but I was at a point in life where it just got too much because this is not how I want to live my life, and I didn't know what to do next or how to sort it. And so for me, the remote work journey kind of started in a unknowing way. And so my way out or to explore something else was to take a break and just go for a small sabbatical. So I was working with Your Story at that point in time. This was around 2012. And I had decided to, there was this international film festival happening in Dharamshala that a friend had told me about. That was Ayush, actually. Mayur, you might You know Ayush. So I had just come there to volunteer at the film festival, and those 2 weeks have somehow now converted into like 7+ years. So that's how the journey had begun for me. And yeah, so initially when I had moved, the idea was to kind of go back to Bangalore and start working, just come here for a break. But that somehow the attraction of the place, or I don't know what it was, that kept calling me again and again. And so for me also, like, I was working in my role at Your Story was that of a writer and managing a little team of writers. So I was the editor as well. So, and it was completely digital, almost new at that point in time, because also the startup scene was very young. We were the Olas and Flipkarts of the world had just started. And so it was never really a conscious decision. It just said, ki, I'll go and work from there. I don't want to involve myself so much in managerial tasks or different things. I want to focus on my writing and I can work. So at that time, Shraddha, the founder of Your Story, she was very supportive in that way. Yeah, as long as you're delivering from wherever you are, I don't have a problem. So that's how the remote journey, remote work journey had begun for me. And yeah, now it's a, so to say, buzzword, and it also has a lot of value in some ways. So the situation has drastically changed. A lot of people have adopted to this, but how Gumakkar had started, or just the journey, it was never a conscious decision. It just kind of happened, looking for something, and remote work happened to be a small part of it. So that's how I look at it right now.
So for you, the passion came first and then the remote work happened, right?
For yeah, most so people, it was now, more like a tool. Yeah.
Yeah. For most people now, I think it's the other way around, because they're forced to work from home and now they are exploring their passion. Would you say, would you advise our listeners to follow the passion first and then not think about remote work first, but yes, think about what you really want?
So actually yesterday when we decided to do this podcast, I was just decided to write something on what my feelings are about remote work and the entire cycle that, so to say, I saw over here, or I'm seeing that. Yeah, remote work is great, but right now it's also a very romantic thought for a lot of people. I get a lot of random emails as well that ki remote work kar lenge to life sort ho jayegi. But I think you would also maybe share the same experience, but life doesn't change. People are the same everywhere. Everything remains the same. Basically, you are the same, as in so as long as remote work per se, yeah, it's an enabler. It's like any other enabler. For someone who is in the village, going to the city would be a same kind of a, you know, motivation, or it would give him or her the same kind of freedom that that remote work gives us in this, maybe listeners of this podcast and the three of us talking over here. So that's a thing that I see that, yeah, to answer your question, yeah, like, if you just say, ki, like, I want to do remote work and then figure out everything later, that's also fine. But that's not really solving any purpose or problem. You'll be still be facing the same questions that what do you want to do in life? Where do you stand? All those things still remain the same. Remote work won't change that.
So Zubin, when you initially moved to Himachal, What were the contrasts that you drew in your head between living in a big city like Bangalore and then living in this rural area in Himachal? What were the initial changes that you felt after shifting there?
Yeah, so the biggest change or shift is, of course, the environment, surroundings, nature, you see just the Dholada ranges over here. If you're closer to the ocean, the sea, so that is you definitely get connected to nature a lot more, and that in a way also so to say, stopped my remote work journey. So because I was working digitally, but after four years, I just couldn't work on the computer as much. So then I started getting connected with more and more of things that were happening locally. So very honestly, if I speak right now, I've hardly taken up any remote work assignments in the last 2 or 3 years. So most of my work has been whatever is happening in the local. So again, if I move back to the early days, yeah. So the biggest contrasts were this as in the beautiful nature around, just the sheer immensity of it. Apart from that, people, there's a general slowness to life. There's a different way of connecting with people. It's everything is not in a hurry. The value system is different. So all these are big contrasts. So if someone is moving in from a mindset that I want to live the same way that I want to live in the city, that changes. For me also, the big learning was that when I moved from the city, I wanted to change the village maybe in some way. I wanted to bring some good, do something over here, which is all great. But I realized that I am no one to really do that. As in, what can happen is you yourself can only change. And because we bring in a very, very different worldview in that way, and the initial reaction is to give that education or gyan to the people who are there, but they have lived their life through centuries, and that's an entirely different way of living and learning. So coming to terms to that in some ways, that you are not here to change what is existing here, but so to say become a part of it or merge with it, or
like,
find a
more like collaborate.
So yeah, these
more
are
like
the kind
integrate.
Of yeah these are the contrasts that I saw.
So do you miss any elements of big city life or the startup life, or you're happy in your space?
Yeah,
it must have been a different experience for you, being in a small place in Himachal and then writing about the startup scene in Bangalore.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, the irony quite is that like we started Gumakkad, and I had kind of almost ran away from Bangalore in some ways, from the instant delivery apps and all these things. But 5-6 years down the line, now Gumakkad itself is the office for I think Swiggy and Zomato or someone. So like the world kind of full circle in some ways. Initially it was very I wouldn't say difficult, but yeah, there was a certain disconnect that had started creeping in like a year or 2 years into the journey, because these were two very, very different worlds. And writing about the high-tech space of Bangalore from a very little village in around Dharamshala, I just couldn't connect the dots, because the things that were being possible in Bangalore, you just couldn't fathom that happening in a remote Himachal village. So over time, that disengagement was, so to say, natural, I guess. And yeah, that shift kind of happened. So now if I look at it, there was a certain repulsion at the early on in my journey that anything city is bad, or all this tech is so much tech is not good. And there was a sort of a repulsion and that kind of feeling from me. But over the years, that also kind of softened, and like things kind of fell into place that is the nature of the city. So in terms of missing the city, it's a very, very personal journey. So for me, it has always, I realized that why I wanted to come away from the city, be alone or move in a small place, was to explore myself more and look at the inner world that we all carry. And that was one of the reasons why I shifted. So in terms of missing startup life or tech space, I don't really think so. But sometimes I do go before the lockdown, of course. Sometimes I go to the city and just, that's a vacation now, the way I look at it, like going to Bangalore, Bombay or Delhi. That's a different change. It's a different energy. There's a lot of activity happening. So yeah, that's how I look at it currently.
So when you initially came to Himachal and started working remotely, you had different plans for yourself. And now in the last few years, you have completely transformed yourself into doing these philanthropic process and going through those spiritual journeys. But would you say that there was a privilege that you were able to work digitally, and you were working in a space that allowed you to work remotely, helped you in your initial stepping years to become who you are today?
Of course. So I would attribute remote work a big chunk in that way, because those first 2-3 years when I had no clue as in where this is heading or why am I here, remote work was a big enabler, because all my bread and butter earning was through writing remotely and working with Your Story mainly. In that way, a lot of credit goes to remote work and having this infrastructure or the facility to work around that. And that time ideas were also different. So yeah, I had attribute a lot of credit to it for me to recognize my journey, so to say.
Yeah. So Zubin, Gumakkad is a place, very special place for me. It transformed my life to the extent that when I got married, I decided to get married in Gumakkad. And you were the founding member of it. So can you share something more about the experience of starting Gumakkad? And then
Gumakkad, when I arrived in Dharamshala, the name already existed. There's a local person named Mohinder Kumar, a very, very entrepreneurial guy. He used to run his small trekking company by that name, and he had a couple of mud houses just for giving out for rent to people. And at that point in time, there was a small little company called MindGrep, run by Pratyush, Ayush, Avnish, and I think 3 or 4 of them, and Akash. They had rented out one of the houses to, they had just shifted and wanted to do a services company from there. And I had happened to meet them, and then collaboratively the idea for doing something locally had emerged. So Gumakkad was first started out with the idea of aggregating all the mud houses in the village, anyone who had a spare room in their house, and we would get tourist travelers to come and stay with the locals and experience the local life. So that's how Gumakkad had started. But we were somehow clear in all our journeys. We knew that we are forming bonds which are beyond just the transaction of staying in a homestay. It's something more than that we are exploring. Not in these many words, but that's the feeling that was there in the initial set of people. And what happened is a lot of travelers came in at that point in time, stayed with the homestays. But since things were very... not very systemized, if someone had, say, didn't have enough money or wanted to just spend some time, we would allow that. So what happened was slowly a family started forming of sorts, and a lot of people who came never went back. So over a year or two, by 2013, I think 2014, late 13, we were a bunch of 15 young guys and girls from across the country, all very, so to say, free-spirited rebels in some ways, who had just left their jobs or wanted, or basically not knowing what they wanted to do, and had landed up here. We call it a small commune, small family. And at the end of the month, we would say, ki yaar, itna kharcha hua hai, jisko bata do, jiske paas jo jo hai. People would put in their money, and that's how the month would run. So that's basically the story of Gumakkad. And now, as in FI, it's still listed in one of the, like whenever anyone lists down the co-working spaces across the country, Gumakkad comes right up there. And it was a great experiment, which happened totally unknowingly, as in we didn't, like co-living and all these were, I think, were not even words, or now that I put into perspective, like, yeah, that things were happening, but something else had led to Gumakkad. And After a couple of years, I think the initial set of teams, so to say, everyone found their own paths, journeys, and that family, so to say, split. But everyone's in touch, so to say, and following. Some people are went back to the city. Some people are still here, started their own things. And Gumakkad was handed over to Mohinder Bhai, whose land it was built on. And then various things have, it has still kind of retained the co-living thing. Multiple things then emerged out of it. And it has been a great playground for a lot of people, I believe.
So when I decided to move to Goa, Gumakkad was the inspiration. I wanted to build something on those lines. And that's how NomadGov was born. You know, we are also doing the same thing, bringing strangers together to live like a family. So if any listeners want to come to Goa, stay productive, happy and healthy with a community of like-minded people, you can check out NomadGov.
Well, tell me a little bit more, as in, like, how do you, like, how many people can you host, or how many people are there during the lockdown? I'd love to learn a little bit more about what's happening there.
Sure, sure. So we started Gumakkad in November 2019.
Nomad Gum.
So, Zubin,
oh, sorry.
See, Zubin, if we fuck up, we can edit it out. No problem.
Yeah.
So Mayur, go.
See, that's how special Gumakkad is.
Yeah. This so, shouldn't be edited.
Yeah, I think so. So I started NomadGov in November 2019, just few months before the lockdown. The idea was to, I spent 5 years as a digital nomad, living in different places, traveling. So the core idea was to create a space for digital nomads by a digital nomad. And the core thought was also to make India popular among digital nomads. And that was one small step towards making that happen. So we currently have 5 rooms, a small co-working space, a little homely cafe, but now that remote work is going mainstream, a lot of people are calling us, asking us about way they can move to Goa, or if we can help them relocate to Goa, their teams to relocate to Goa. So we are expanding. So in just like 8 months from starting, we have hosted people from 14 countries, and I feel that's a good achievement. A lot of people came to India for the first time because they came to know about NomadGov, and I consider that as a, you know, as a privilege or a success. So during the lockdown, we had a couple of people who were stuck here. Incidentally, people, it's kind of, because the whole idea was started with Gumakkad somewhere in the head. So I think when people come here, they come for a month, end up being here for 3 months. There are a couple of people who are here since last 5 months. So I think it's quite there. Not as sticky as Gumakkad yet, but
I think with Gumakkad, what was the thing was, there was like, now in hindsight, I think some amount of boundaries are helpful, but it was the lives were really intermingled with each other. At least for the initial set of people, I think our time of staying at Gumakkad barely overlapped. But for any community living or thing, I think it's important, or maybe like to chart out some amount of boundaries becomes very important for the long term. If it, because I've seen also a lot of things then also turn into a long term community, then you might move to a farm and also start that and have a, yeah, like how maybe Jaga is. So it's a very, very interesting space, and this is where things then remote work takes a different turn.
Yeah. So you mentioned about farm. I remember, you know, when we were neighbors, you were working on this mud cottage on a farm. And then you moved to Bede. So I think I'm curious to know about your journey from building a mud house in a farm to moving to Bede. And then there were a lot of other journeys in between.
This only has been experiments. So that mud house somehow saw manifestation in Bede. So at that point in time, I was going through this phase where I wanted to do a lot of manual labor. So I was doing a mountaineering course in Kashmir, and someone had cycled from Tamil Nadu to Kashmir for that mountaineering course as well. So after the course, the two of us, and this guy was from Tamil Nadu, a hardcore, he had left everything. He would just cycle around, carry a bag of rice, eat that and pickle or whatever whoever would offer. And he used to go and build, help at construction sites. So he was and so when we started talking and I shared this idea that I want to do a small little house for ourselves. So he came along and then we started making that house. And this was, I wanted to see the entire process because getting it made, I didn't have that kind of money as well to get it made, but just what all goes into making a house. So we like dug the foundation, got the stones from the river, started building it up ground up. So that was a huge learning experience and a lot of underestimation in terms of efforts, because there were a few volunteers and two or three of us working on it. We managed to do the foundation and the plinth and raise the walls, but then the monsoon struck and that cottage never really got completed, and then it was converted into a basically a tenting space. So we had the foundation, we put up iron rods and made it into a tent. So the house is still there. And also what happened was that place was on lease. The lease was getting over, so we had to move to a new place, and that's how Bede had happened. And in Bede we came across this really old mud house while on a small hike, and we had met the owner in Bede, and he had showed us that वहाँ पे कहीं पे मेरा एक पुराना सा घर है. So we had just gone to see if we can find it, and we came across it. So then we came down and talked among ourselves. So it was that point. It was me, Saraswati, and Anish who were there, and we said ki if we let this and they were going to break it down. So we were like, if they let this house go down, then we shouldn't cry about mud houses and say ki sab log ye tod rahe aur sab kuch cementify ho raha hai, so we shouldn't complain then. So it was on that whim that we decided to rent out this place, and the guy was also very friendly and helpful in that way, that he also wanted to protect that house because it was his ancestral house. And he gave us a very, very good deal. I'll give you the figures also, like 50,000 for a year for the house and the land around it. And he said, yeah, this is great. So we said, we'll take it for 5 years. And so we gave 2 years in advance, and then he used that money to help us in rebuilding that as well. So I say that with a little bit of pride over that finally, after so many years of, because I see that a lot of people who move to Himachal, at least, they want to live in a mud house, they want to live like the locals, but our lifestyles are still very much that of the city, and there is a huge, huge gap in that. So that has been an entire journey of mud house in some ways. So now coming to live in that kind of a facility where you don't really have a water connection. There's only one water connection outside. There's one squat pilot that's also outside. The ergonomics of the house are very different.
So Zubin, thanks for letting us know about Ashram Space. So if one wants to book and come and stay at your space, how could someone do that?
It's a pretty simple process, as in we have a website with our contact information, and anyone can just ping into me or write an email. There is a very small filtration process, in the sense that we just like to ask what is the purpose behind coming, and we like to have a minimum stay period of a week and a maximum of a month, and that's the process. But considering the current situation in Himachal with the pandemic scene, I think at least for this year we'll not be able to operate, and things will depend on how things unfold from there.
Okay, so what's your website?
Yeah, it's ashram.space, ashram.space.
Okay, all right.
So Ashram Space also has a small angle of, it's a very small publication house as well. So since I have a background in media and journalism, so to say, I have been experimenting with self-publishing, and over the last few years we have come out with 8 little booklets. So that's also a small angle that so now currently our more and more energies are focused towards that. And these are like, one is a short story collection that I have written from my experiences here in the Kangra Valley. A couple of books are autobiographies that we designed for someone, like people in their 50s or 60s who wrote their life stories, and we helped them put it together. Then there was a set of magazines that we did, like a set of 4 magazines. So yeah, there is a small angle of the publication house as well.
And where can people find all of these publications?
All of these books are available on the website as well. As soon as anyone logs into the website, it takes you to the publication page right now, and people can just download the PDF. The PDFs are on a contribution model, so there are no questions asked. You can write away, just download the PDF, and then if anyone feels like contributing something, they can transfer the money online. And for print, depends on what we have in stock, people can order for prints as well.
Okay. So Zubin, now that you are also, you know, creating content, doing publishing from Ashram Space, do you curate the requests, as in do you give preference to content creators who want to come to your space, or how is it like?
Yeah, it kind of has turned out to be like that. I don't know, preference, or since all the publicity, so to say, for Ashram Space has also been only through word of mouth, and we don't have social media channels or anything of that sort. But since I have been in the region from like almost 7 years now, and with the background in media, fair number of people know me, so I get a lot of inbound queries anyways. So, and that typically ends up being from the creative space. So I think 60 to 70% of the people who we would have hosted would be in this domain, either filmmakers or writers or digital marketers, creative people.
So Zubin, being a writer, it's very important to keep rediscovering yourself, right? You've done a lot of adventures around India and abroad. Does meeting a lot of different people while you're traveling or living at offbeat places helps you to have a different perspective in the way you see the world? Or like, does it help to break your own stereotypes when you're writing?
Yeah, absolutely. As in, just the change in context, opening up to so many different contexts, as in, be it a offbeat place, foreign place, a small village, it definitely kind of makes you think more, observe more. And so I started writing almost 13, 14 years ago from my diary, and then had a little blog, and then I shifted or veered towards business journalism because that is what would pay the bills. And so then for a good 6 to 7 years, I was writing about startups, businesses. And then over the last 2 or 3 years, I'm kind of shifted back to call it passion writing, or just basically like writing from what flows from within. So, and at all points in time, your external environment influences and changes a lot in you, and gives direction to how you develop as a writer.
So when you look back and see yourself when you were just passing out from your engineering and the time you were writing at that time, then and now, do you see a difference in how you perceive your writing, how you go
absolutely
ahead
with it? Huge difference. yeah, very big difference. Yeah, as in, I was some time ago, I was just looking at the first few blog posts that I had written for my college magazine or something, and it's interesting to see the evolution. But all of us, I think, we all change every day, and of course, like 12, 13 years, more than a decade. So then you see, as in, if I have to give an observation, as in, it was much more, what do you say, unfiltered, which is maybe also good in a way. But over the course of time, my thoughts or whatever I write comes from a much more settled space, so to say. It's not to say that curbing the rawness or wildness of it, but it comes from a much more neutral standpoint. That's what I feel.
You talked about moving to passion writing and not just business writing, like starting from business writing, and now you're doing passion writing. So I remember when we were neighbors, you were working on a slow take magazine. You know, I'm sure our listeners would love to hear more about the concept, because earlier in this podcast, you said that you took the decision of moving away from the city because you had this impression that tech is bad, and now you are moving towards slow tech. So throw some light on that.
So I think slow tech, this is an initiative that I had picked up sometime in 2017, I guess. And this was a part of the print magazine that we were doing. And so the idea is, there are lots of such slow movements. I think globally there is slow food, there is slow tech, there is slow fiber, all kinds of things. And the primary idea where all the entire slow movement comes from is to maybe consume things consciously in some ways, and basically just ask the question as to why we are doing what we are doing. And because everything is so interconnected and interwoven, that if we just go to the depth of it, we might be able to find out more about what's there to it. So slow tech was started with the idea of covering small initiatives where people put in some thought to why they're doing what they're doing. And this is not to say that everyone does not do that, but so we covered people like who were doing, how do you say, like how one of our projects was the Panchakki. Panchakki, translating is to English, is the water wheel. So in the Himalayan regions, Pani ki chakki hoti hai na. So this is basically a electricity mill, sorry, a mill which doesn't use electricity, like the flour mill. And this was there in all the villages at some point in time, and still is there at a lot of places. So this was a beautiful concept, and the thing was that anyone in the village would go to this chakki and with their grains, and they got their ground grains ground, and in return the owner of the chakki would get say 5% of this of the flour. So there's some kind of a barter happening, and over time then we got the electricity mills, and from a beautiful small self-reliant system then it became more standardized. And there are also the health benefits of the water wheel. This is all connected to like how your the cold pressed oils, and so this is a so to say cold ground chakki. So basically any such initiative, and there are now people who are trying to revive these kind of mills. So the idea of Slowtech was to put light onto such initiatives where people are thinking more about what goes on behind making anything. And this can range from anything, as in from making chocolates to making fiber to making anything. So yeah, that was the idea of Slowtech, and we covered a lot of nice initiatives, and we have a print magazine. It's there on the Ashram Space website, so if you want to go through them you can just click on that edition and go through all the stories. And I'm also in touch with a lot of them, so if any of the reader wants to get connected to any of the initiative, I would be happy to make those introductions as well. So yeah, that's Slowtech.
That's a wonderful initiative that you've taken, Zubin.
Thank you.
This all the last 10 minutes that we've talked, that tells me that your roots, since you've come to Himachal, there's something very significant happened to you. And as I was going through your Instagram, and also I looked at the documentary that you produced with Ms. Tenzin. Mm-hmm. My question to you right now is, when did Buddhism enter your life, and how has the journey been since then? Was it the religion Buddhism that entered, or was it the Vipassana practice that initially entered your life?
So Buddhism, so to say, it's just an expression, the way I see it. I am not a religious person, so to say, as in I don't call myself a Buddhist or anything of that sort. And basically what happened, or the way I would like to put it, is basically some sort of an inward journey began, because leaving Bangalore and coming here, and this basic recognition that there's something more to life that I'm looking for, as in finding that happiness which is not dependent on external situations. And in hindsight I can say this, but Buddhism is just one expression, and all religions have their roots, so to say, in this. So currently I'm also exploring a lot of Vedanta. I'm trying to learn a little bit of Sanskrit and reading the Upanishads, and Ramana Maharshi is I consider him to be my guru. And so he passed away in the body in the 1950, but
Who Am I?
Ah, okay. So there's one person, Nochur Venkatraman. He's alive right now, and he does a lot of talks at the ashram as well, and beyond. So I'm kind of deeply connected with him and his philosophy, or just the way of being, the self-inquiry. So I think this, and coming back to the question of Vipassana, I think the first Vipassana that I did maybe in 2015, and that was the spark, so to say, like those 10 days of intense sitting. It gave me a very, very beautiful direction that, okay, this is something that really needs to be looked at more. And from then on, then the journey has begun, and this is like an infinite journey of lifetimes, maybe, I don't know. So it's been a beautiful exploration then. So yeah, and since Himachal is there, and Dharamshala is a Tibetan colony, so to say. So a lot of exploration has also happened through Buddhism. And I go to Tiruvannamalai almost every year for a couple of times. So I must have visited the place close to more than 10 times maybe. Tiruvannamalai is where Ramana Ashram is, where Ramana Maharshi did his tapasya. So yeah, these are, so to say, my spiritual inclinations or yeah.
And what was the idea for the 3600 kilometer parikarma that you did around Namrata River? Where did that come from?
The idea for the parikrama actually came to my partner Saraswati. She had wanted to do this from a very long time, and this is a very, very old tradition, maybe hundreds or maybe even thousands of years. So the idea is that people start walking from any point, keeping the river to the right, and then just start walking, and then you go to the source of the river, then cross over, walk the entire length on the other side of 1300 kilometers, then again cross at the origin, which is in Amarkantak on the Madhya Pradesh and Chhattisgarh border, and then come back to where you started from. And the idea behind this is basically just plain simple soul searching, because it's a pilgrimage. You are walking without money, you're walking without phone, and your context is changing every day. You don't know when you'll get food, if you'll get food, what kind of food you'll get. So this is like living a sadhu's life, and this is something that was there in me from a few years, this opportune time came along, and we thought, okay, let's go on this. So yeah, it was 4 months on the road, lots of I wouldn't want to call it crazy, but a lot of mystical experiences, beautiful, beautiful journey, lots of learnings. And I would like to compare the Narmada Parikrama as the Vipassana in motion, because in Vipassana, you are just sitting like 10 days, 13 hours every day. You're just meditating. And while on the Parikrama, your context is of change, continuous change, your physical change. So you just walk, all you do is wake up at 5, walk, 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 walk. And by evening, you find a place to sleep, and then next day repeat. So in both these processes, or any practice, so to say, there are so many different things that rise up. You tears start flowing for no reason, lots and lots of love just blossoms and flowers, and all kinds of things happen, like your anger, your jealousies, your all these emotions, they rise and they fall, they rise and they fall. So it's just a journey of seeing this and transcending them in some ways, maybe. And yeah, that's the motive behind both of these and all of the practices that exist. So I wanted to go on this journey, and it's been a huge, huge learning, and it's been wonderful. Very hard to put it in words.
Yeah, it sounds. I mean, for a person like me right now listening to this, it sounds a lot of discomfort. But I'm sure that anything that gives somebody a sense of discomfort also gives a lot of valuable outputs.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
So the world is going through a big discomfort right now. Young people be listening to this podcast right now. There are a lot of inhibitions about themselves, about uncertainties, anxiety happening in the world right now, which is like like people go for a 10-day Vipassana session and stay at one place, be silent. It's staying at home for 3 months continuously is almost equivalent to that idea of how according to you, how should people use this time to rediscover themselves or to go more deeper and inner.
Beautiful point, actually, as in, this has been like a global retreat for the world in some ways. A lot of people I know don't have this luxury to not think about where their food will come from, and they have to constantly worry. Lots of things are there, but yeah, for people who have the opportunity, this is a great time to just be with themselves or in whatever situation they are. It's very, very, very easy to say in some ways, because I consider myself pretty lucky to be where I am with all the greenery around and trees. But if I imagine myself to be in a city where you're in a small house and you cannot even step out. So I'm sure it's very difficult, but as you very rightly said, like all discomfort, any discomfort brings you closer to some truth within yourself. And that's the point of any spiritual practice, or don't even call it spiritual practices, and just we can look at this as an opportunity to just not do anything for some time and see what we are all made of, and what this thing called life is, and why are we here. So basically just very, very fundamental questions. Intellectually asking them, it looks kind of silly, as in who am I, or you can. So there's a very, very subtle but beautiful difference in intellectually trying to satisfy a question and experientially trying to dissolve the question. So this lockdown is a great way to experience that and actually not intellectually answer something, but face the emptiness, face the absolute nothingness of life, and go to the pits of the darkness and then see where light lies or where truth lies. So
yeah,
that's how I kind of look at it, and it's a great opportunity to, I hope more and more of us are able to do this. And
I think the change is happening, because the illusions that people were living in, of the material superficials, that this is my job, this is my life, this is what I'm aiming for, and this is what my future would be. Those ideas have broken down suddenly for people. And people have started questioning who they are, what their passions are, what truly makes them happy. And this is like a roller coaster ride. The more down you go, the more up it goes again.
You
know, in that context, in the context of what we discussed just now, I know that you're also working on some mental health initiatives for senior citizens. So we would love to know more about this.
So the last 1 year has primarily been living the life of a sadhu in some ways, because it was 4 or 5 months on the road in the parikrama, and I was also in the sadhu attire, so that was pretty interesting and funny also in some ways. But so with the white dhoti and the white t-shirt and a jola, so I wanted to experience that life as well. And so yeah, it had been that for a good part of the year, and then suddenly the lockdown came about, and then it was time to sit and thinking a little bit. I felt that I had a little bit that I could share with people, or just act as a sounding board in some ways. So I've started working with my colleges. They have a cell where young students write in with their queries, or if someone is undergoing a depression, someone is going through a tough phase in life, and they need someone to talk to. So I kind of opened myself up to that, and I do like weekly calls with them and some few friends and family, not family members, but friends and acquaintances. So this is, I don't like really to use the word therapy per se, because this is basically just having a conversation. Anyone who's looking to sound off ideas or just how they're feeling, So I do this very informally, and that's how it is happening right now. And the initiative that we briefly spoke about, this is something just a friend is working in Mumbai on it, and I think we're not still at a stage where we can talk openly about it because it hasn't launched or something. So, but yeah, in general, I am looking to work in this direction where we can, because I, in the current times of so much uncertainty, if one thing a person can hold on to is a stable mind. So if you have a calm, stable mind, you can go through a lot of situations, and anything that I can do to help more people come at this stage or have this basic stability of some sense. So I'm putting out more energies in that direction. I'm also, from all the writings that I've had here and there, I'm putting it all together in one blog and maybe have some exercises, or I don't know how it will shape out, but yeah, I'm trying to put in more efforts in this direction.
So Zubin, you know, remote work aided your transformation from a big city to a village in Himachal. Yeah. Do you think it has the power to bridge the urban-rural divide in some ways?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. As in, we have seen how Rakkad changed, as in where me and Mayur both lived for a few years. The place from what it was and where it kind of stands right now, it has created definitely a bridge between the urban and rural. And the bridge is, it's a very, very delicate topic also in some ways, because these are also very, very different lifestyles and ways of living. And bridging the urban-rural divide is a great idea, but to a degree, it's also a very romantic idea, because where I live, the culture or the local people, they are shepherds. And when I think of trying to bridge the urban community that is coming in and this rural population, which is only shepherds and farmers mainly, it's a pretty daunting task to form a bridge, so to say. But yeah, people have started living, people have accepted people coming from outside, and there is certainly intermingling happening in some ways. Of course, everyone will have their boundaries, and that's there. But you see this as in the future, I do see a lot of such small villages turning into little hubs. In the Kangra Valley itself, I can say like Rakkad being one, Dharamshala is now a smart city in itself. Kandabadi is a small village which has a lot of people from outside. Beer is one of the hotspots. If you look at rural-urban divide or bridging, Auroville is a great example in the south. There are nice little communities coming up in the suburbs of Bombay. Of course, Goa is there. So I'm sure the remote work and remote work has, the internet and remote work has played a huge role in enabling this. So a lot of credit goes to it.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Zubin, for the great insight on urban-rural divide. We have already talked about this, that in some ways, you know, you attribute your transformation or where you are today to remote work, because without that, you wouldn't have left the city, or you would have chosen to come back after living in Himachal.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for all the insights that you shared, all the stories that you shared on this podcast.
Thank you so
I'm
much,
sure
Mayur.
You are already inspired to take journey inwards and outwards listening to this. And you are a true explorer. You are a true remote explorer.
honor talking to you, Mayur and Shehzada. This was amazing. Thank you so much for the opportunity, and yeah, all the very best with everything. Yeah,
hope to see you in Ashram Space or Nomad Gao.
Yes, bilkul, bilkul.
Thank you for listening to Remote Explorers. This is me, Shehzada, and I have with me Mayur. We interviewed today Zubin, and we had a very interesting conversation with him. So stay tuned for more such episodes. See you next time.